Chapter 8. Short as the time was, the entire community must be rallied, brought together, to stand firm together, to hold fast. Indeed, haste was in their favor, for under no pressure the timorous and half-hearted might fall away. Under threat of imminent attack, all were eager to find and keep the center, the strength of the group. A center there was, and he was in it. Was the center himself, with Andre, South Wind, Martin, Italia, Sante, and all the others, the young, the determined. Vera was not there, and yet was there, in all their decisions, her gentleness and unshakable firmness. Elia was not there. He and Jewel and several others, mostly older people, stood aside, must stand aside, because their will was not the will of the community. Elia had never been strong for the plan of emigration, and now he argued that they had gone too far. The girl must be sent back to her father at once, with a delegation who would sit down with the council and talk. If we'll only sit down and talk to each other, there's no need for all this distrust and defiance.
"Armed men don't sit down and talk, Elia," said old Leon wearily.
It was not to Elia that they turned, but to Vera's people, the young ones. Lev felt the strength of his friends and the whole community, supporting and upholding. It was as if he were not Lev alone, but Lev times 1,000. Himself, but himself immensely increased, enlarged. A boundless self mingled with all the other selves, set free, as no man alone could ever be free. There was scarcely need to take counsel, to explain to people what must be done, the massive, patient resistance which they must set against the city's violence. They knew already, they thought for him and he for them. His words spoke their will. The girl Luge, the stranger, self-exiled, her presence in Shanti sharpened this sense of perfect community by contrast and edged it with compassion. They knew why she had come, and they tried to be kind to her. She was alone among them, scared and suspicious, drawing herself up in her pride and her boss's daughter arrogance whenever she did not understand. But she did understand, Lev thought, however much her reason might confuse her. She understood with the heart, for she had come to them, trusting. When he told her that, told her that she was and always had been, in spirit, one of them, one of the people of the peace, she put on her disdainful look. "I don't even know what these ideas of yours are," she said. But she had, in fact, learned a great deal from Vera, and during these strange, tense, inactive days of waiting for word or attack from the city, while ordinary work was suspended and Vera's people were much together, Lev talked with her as often as he could, longing to bring her fully among them, into the center where so much peace and strength was, and where one was not alone. "It's very dull, really," he explained, "a kind of list of rules, just like school. First you do this, next you do that. First you try negotiation and arbitration of the problem, whatever it is, by existing means and institutions. You try to talk it out, the way Elia keeps saying. That step was Vera's group going to talk with the council, you see. It didn't work. So you go on to step 2, non-cooperation, a kind of settling down and holding still so they know you mean what you said. That's where we are now. Then step 3, which we're now preparing, issue of an ultimatum, a final appeal offering a constructive solution and a clear explanation of what will be done if that solution isn't agreed upon now."
"And what will be done if they don't happen to agree?"
"Move on to step 4. Civil disobedience."
"What's that?"
"A refusal to obey any orders or laws, no matter what, issued by the authority being challenged. We set up our own parallel, independent authority, and follow our own course."
"Just like that?"
"Just like that," he said, smiling. "It worked, you know, over and over again on Earth, against all kinds of threats and imprisonments, tortures, attacks. You can read about it. You should read Mirofsky's history."
"I can't read books," the girl said with her disdainful air. I tried one once. If it worked so well, why did you get sent away from Earth?
There weren't enough of us. The governments were too big and too powerful, but they wouldn't have sent us off into exile, would they, if they hadn't been afraid of us?
That's what my father says about his ancestors, Luge remarked. Her eyebrows were drawn down level above her eyes, dark, pondering eyes. Lev watched her, stilled for a moment by her stillness, caught by her strangeness. For despite his insistence that she was one of them, she was not. She was not like Southwind, not like Vera, not like any woman he knew. She was different, alien to him. Like the gray heron of the meeting pool, there was a silence in her, a silence that drew him aside, toward a different center. He was so caught, so held in watching her, that though Southwind said something, he did not hear it, and when Luge herself spoke again, he was startled, and for a moment the familiar room of Southwind's house seemed strange, an alien place.
I wish we could forget about all that, she said.
Earth. It's 100 years ago, a different world, a different sun. What does it matter to us here? We're here now. Why can't we do things our way? I'm not from Earth. You're not from Earth. This is our world. It ought to have its own name. Victoria, that's stupid. It's an Earth word. We ought to give it its own name.
What name?
One that doesn't mean anything. Ubu or Baba, or call it mud. It's all mud. If Earth's called Earth, why can't this one be called mud?
She sounded angry, as she often did, but when Lev laughed, she laughed too.
Southwind only smiled, but said in her soft voice, Yes, that's right. And then we could make a world of our own, instead of always imitating what they did on Earth. If there wasn't any violence, there wouldn't have to be any nonviolence.
Start with mud and build a world, said Lev. But don't you see that's what we're doing?
Making mud pies, said Luge.
Building a new world.
Out of bits of the old one.
If people forget what happened in the past, they have to do it all over again. They never get on into the future. That's why they kept fighting wars on Earth. They forgot what the last one was like. We are starting fresh. Because we remember the old mistakes and won't make them.
Sometimes, it seems to me, said Andre, who was sitting on the hearth mending a sandal for Southwind. His side trade was cobbling.
If you don't mind my saying so, Luge, that in the city, they remember all the old mistakes so they can make them all over again.
I don't know, she said with indifference. She stood up and went to the window. It was closed. For the rain had not stopped and the weather was colder with a wind from the east. The small fire in the hearth kept the room warm and bright. Lou stood with her back to that snugness, looking out through the tiny, cloudy panes of the window at the dark fields and the windy clouds. On the morning after she came to Shanti, after talking with Lev and the others, she had written a letter to her father. A short letter, though it had taken her all morning to write it. She had shown it first to Southwind, then to Lev. When he looked at her now, the straight, strong figure outlined black against the light, he saw again the writing of her letter, straight, black, stiff strokes. She had written, Honored Sir, I have left our house. I will stay in Shantytown because I do not approve of your plans. I decided to leave, and I decided to stay. Nobody is holding me prisoner or hostage. These people are my hosts. If you mistreat them, I am not on your side. I had to make this choice. You have made a mistake about H. McMillan. Senora Adelson had nothing to do with my coming here. It was my choice. Your respectful daughter, Luge Marina Falku Cooper. No word of affection. No plea for forgiveness. And no answer. The letter had been taken by a runner at once, young Welcome. He had shoved it under the door of Casa Falku and trotted right on, As soon as he got safe back to Shanti, Luge had begun to wait for her father's response, to dread it, but also, visibly, to expect it. That was 2 full days ago. No answer had come. No attack or assault at night. Nothing. They all discussed what change in Falku's plans Luge's defection might have caused, but they did not discuss it in front of her unless she brought it up. She said now, "I don't understand your ideas, really. All the steps, all the rules, all the talk." "They are our weapons," Lev replied. "But why fight? There's no other choice." "Yes, there is. To go."
"Go?"
"Yes. Go north, to the valley you found. Just go. Leave." "It's what I did," she added, looking imperiously at him when he did not answer at once. "I left."
"And they'll come after you," he said gently.
She shrugged. "They haven't. They don't care." Southwind made a little noise of warning, protest, sympathy. It really said all that needed saying, but Lev translated it.
"But they do, and they will, Luge. Your father..."
"If he comes after me, I'll run farther. I'll go on."
"Where?"
She turned away again and said nothing. They all thought of the same thing, of the wilderness. It was as if the wilderness came into the cabin, as if the walls fell down, leaving no shelter. Lev had been there, Andre had been there, months of the endless, voiceless solitude. It was in their souls now, and they could never wholly leave it. Southwind had not been in the wilderness, but her love lay buried in it. Even Luge, who had never seen or known it, the child of those who for 100 years had built up their walls against it and denied it, knew it and feared it. Knew it was foolishness to talk of leaving the colony alone. Lev watched her in silence. He pitied her, sharp pity, as for a hurt, stubborn child who refuses comfort, holds aloof, will not weep. But she was not a child. It was a woman he saw standing there, a woman standing alone in a place without help or shelter, a woman in the wilderness. And pity was lost in admiration and in fear. He was afraid of her. There was a strength in her that was not drawn from love or trust or community, did not rise from any source that should give strength, any source he recognized. He feared that strength and craved it. These 3 days he had been with her, he had thought of her constantly, had seen everything in terms of her, as if all their struggle made sense only if she could be made to understand it, as if her choice outweighed their plans and the ideals they lived by. She was pitiable, admirable, precious as any human soul was precious, but she must not take over his mind. She must be one of them, acting with him, supporting him, not filling and confusing his thoughts like this. Later there would be time to think about her and understand her when the confrontation was over, when they had won through to peace. Later there would be all the time in the world. "We can't go north now," he said patiently, a little coldly. "If a group left now, it would weaken the unity of those who must stay behind, and the city would track settlers down. We have to establish our freedom to go here, now. Then we will go." "Why did you give them the maps? Show them the way," Luge said impatiently and hotly. "That was stupid. You could have just gone."
"We are a community," Lev said, "the city and the town." And left it at that.
Andre rather spoiled his point by adding, "Anyhow, we couldn't just sneak off. A big lot of people migrating leave a very easy trail to follow."
"So if they did follow you all the way north there to your mountains, you're there already, and you say, 'Too bad, this is ours. Go find yourselves another valley. There's plenty of room.'"
"And they would use force. The principle of equality and free choice must be established first. Here."
"But they use force here. Veer is already a prisoner, and the others in the jail, and the old man lost his eye, and the bullies are coming to beat you up or shoot you. All to establish a principle when you could have gone.
got out, gone free.
Freedom's won by sacrifice, South Wind said.
Lev looked at her, then quickly at Luge. He wasn't sure if Luge knew of Timo's death on the journey to the north. Probably, here alone with South Wind the last three nights, she did. In any case, the quietness of South Wind's voice quieted her.
I know, Luge said. You have to take risks. But sacrifice... I hate that idea, sacrifice.
Lev grinned in spite of himself.
And what have you done?
Not sacrificed myself for any idea. I just ran away, don't you understand? And that's what you all ought to do.
Luge spoke in challenge, defiance, self-defense, not conviction. But South Wind's response startled Lev.
You may be right, she said.
So long as we stand and fight, even though we fight with our weapons, we fight their war.
Luge Falku was an outsider, a stranger. She did not know how the people of the peace thought and felt, but to hear South Wind say something irresponsible was shocking, an affront to their perfect unity.
To run away and hide in the forest, that's a choice, Lev said. For conies, yes. Not for human beings. Standing upright and having two hands doesn't make us human. Standing up and having ideas and ideals does. And holding fast to those ideals, together. We can't live alone, or we die alone, like animals.
South Wind nodded sadly, but Luge frowned straight back at him.
Death is death. Does it matter whether it's in bed in the house or outside in the forest? We are animals. That's why we die at all.
But to live and die for the sake of the spirit, that's different. That's different from running and hiding, all separate, selfish, scratching for food, cowering, hating, each alone.
Lev stammered. He felt his face hot. He met Luge's eyes and stammered again and was silent. Praise was in her look. Praise such as he had never earned, never dreamed of earning. Praise and rejoicing so that he knew himself confirmed in that same moment of anger and argument, confirmed totally in his words, his life, his being. This is the true center, he thought. The words went quick and clear across his mind. He did not think of them again, but nothing on the far side of those words was the same. Nothing would ever be the same. He had come up into the mountains. His right hand was half held out toward Luge in a gesture of urgent pleading. He saw it. She saw it. That unfinished gesture. Suddenly self-conscious, he dropped his hand. The gesture was unfinished. She moved abruptly, turning away, and said with anger and despair, "Oh, I don't understand. It's all so strange. I'll never understand. You know everything, and I've never even thought about anything."
She looked physically smaller as she spoke, small, furious, surrendering.
"I just wish..."
She stopped short.
"It will come, Luge," he said. "You don't have to run to it. It comes. It will come. I promise."
She did not ask what he promised, nor could he have said. When he left the house, the rainy wind struck him in the face, taking his breath away. He gasped. Tears filled his eyes, but not from the wind. He thought of that bright morning, the silver sunrise, and his great happiness only 3 days ago. Today it was gray, no sky, little light, a lot of rain and mud. Mud, the world's name is mud, he thought, and wanted to laugh, but his eyes were still full of tears. She had renamed the world. That morning on the road, he thought, that was happiness, but this is... And he had no word for it, only her name, Luge. Everything was contained in that, the silver sunrise, the great burning sunset over the city years ago, all the past and all that was to come, even their work now, the talking and the planning, the confrontation and their certain victory, the victory of the light. I promise, he whispered into the wind. All my life, all the years of my life. He wanted to walk slower, to stop, to hold the moment. but the very wind that blew in his face forced him forward. There was so much to do, so little time now. Later, later. Tonight might be the night Macmillan's gang came. There was no knowing. Evidently, guessing that Luge had betrayed their plan, they had changed it. There was nothing to do until their own plans were complete, but wait and be ready. Readiness was all. There would be no panic. No matter whether city or town made the first move, the people of the peace would know what to do, how to act. He strode on, almost running into Shanti. The taste of the rain was sweet on his lips. He was at home, late in the dark afternoon, when the message came. His father brought it from the meeting house. "A scar-faced fellow, a guard," Sasha said in his soft, ironic voice. "Came strolling up, asked for Schultz. I think he meant you, not me." It was a note on the thick, coarse paper they made in the city. For a moment, Lev thought Luge had written the stiff black words. "Schultz, I will be at the smelting ring at sundown today. Bring as many as you like. I will be alone. Luis Bournier Falcou." A trick. An obvious trick. Too obvious? There was just time to get back to Southwind's house and show Luge the note. "If he says he'll be there alone, he'll be alone," she said. "You heard him planning to trick us with Macmillan," Andre said. She glanced past Andre with contempt. "This is his name," she said. "He wouldn't put his name to a lie. He'll be there alone."
"Why?"
She shrugged. "I'm going," Lev said. "Yes, with you, Andre, and as many as you think necessary, but you'll have to round them up pretty quick. There's only an hour or so of daylight left."
"You know they want you as a hostage," Andre said. "Are you going to walk right into their hands?"
Lev nodded energetically. "Like a Watsit," he said, and laughed. "In and out. Come on, let's get a bunch together, Andre. Luge, do you want to come?"
She stood indecisive.
"No," she said. She winced.
"I can't. I'm afraid."
"You're wise."
"I should go. To tell him myself that you're not keeping me here, that I chose. He doesn't believe it."
"What you choose and whether he believes it doesn't really matter," Andre said. "You're still a pretext. Their property. Better not come, Luge. If you're there, they'll probably use force to get you back."
She nodded, but still hesitated. Finally, she said, "I should come." She said it with such desperate resolution that Lev broke in. "No," but she went on, "I have to. I won't stand aside and be talked about, fought over, handed back and forth."
"You will not be handed back," Lev said. "You belong to yourself. Come with us if you choose."
She nodded. The smelting ring was an ancient ring tree site south of the road, halfway between town and city, and centuries older than either. The trees had long ago fallen and decayed, leaving only the round central pond. The city's first iron smelting works had been set up there. It too had decayed when richer ore was found in the South Hills 40 years ago. The chimneys and machinery were gone, the old sheds, rotten planked and crazy, overgrown with bindweed and poison rose, crouched, abandoned by the flat shore of the pond. Andre and Lev had got together a group of 20 as they came. Andre led them around by the old sheds to make sure no party of guards was hiding in or behind them. They were empty, and there was no other place for a gang to conceal themselves within several hundred meters. It was a flat place, treeless, desolate and miserable-looking in the gloomy end of the daylight. Fine rain fell onto the round gray water that lay unsheltered, defenseless, like a blind, open eye. On the far side of the pond, Falcou stood waiting for them. They saw him move away from a thicket where he had taken some shelter from the rain and come walking around the shore to them, alone. Lev started forward from the others. Andre let him go ahead, but followed a couple of meters behind him,
with Sasha, Martin, Luge, and several others. The rest of their group stayed scattered out along the gray pond's edge and on the slope that led up to the road, on guard. Falku stopped, facing Lev. They stood right on the shore of the pond where the walking was easier. Between them lay a tiny, muddy inlet of the water, a bay no wider than the length of a man's arm, with shores of fine sand, a harbor for a child's toy boat. In the intense vividness of his perceptions, Lev was as aware of that bit of water and sand and of how a child might play there as he was of Falku's erect figure, his handsome face that was Luge's face and yet wholly different, his belted coat darkened by rain on the shoulders and sleeves. Falku certainly saw his daughter in the group behind Lev, but he did not look at her nor speak to her. He spoke to Lev in a soft, dry voice, a little hard to hear over the vast whisper of the rain. "I'm alone, as you see, and unarmed. I speak for myself alone, not as counselor." Lev nodded. He felt a desire to call this man by his name, not Signor or Falku, but his own name, Luis. He did not understand the impulse and did not speak. "I wish my daughter to come home." Lev indicated, with a slight open gesture, that she was there behind him. "Speak to her, Señor Falku," he said. "I came to speak to you, if you speak for the rebels." "Rebels? Against what, Señor? I, or any of us, will speak for Shanti, if you like, but Luge Marina can speak for herself." "I did not come to argue," Falku said. His manner was perfectly controlled and polite, his face rigid. The quietness, the stiffness, were those of a man in pain. "Listen. There is to be an attack on the town. You know that now. I could not prevent it now if I wanted to, though I have delayed it. But I want my daughter out of it. Safe. If you'll send her home with me, I'll send Senora Adelson and the other hostages, under guard, to you tonight. I'll come with them, if you like. Let her go back with me then. This is between us alone. The rest of it, the fighting. You started it by your disobedience. I cannot stop it. Neither can you, now. This is all we can do. Trade our hostages, and so save them."
"Señor, I respect your candor, but I didn't take Luge Marina from you, and I can't give her back."
As he spoke, Luge came up beside him, wrapped in her black shawl. "Father," she said in a clear, hard voice, not softly as he and Falku had spoken, "you can stop Macmillan's bullies if you want to." Falku's face did not change, could not change, perhaps, without going to pieces. There was a long silence, full of the sound of rain. The light was heavy, bright only low and far away in the west.
"I can't, Luge," he said in that painful, quiet voice. "Herman is... he is determined to take you back."
"And if I came back with you, so that he had no pretext, would you order him not to attack Shanti?" Falku stood still. He swallowed hard, as if his throat were very dry. Lev clenched his hands, seeing that, seeing the man stand there in his pride that could endure no humiliation and was humiliated, his strength that must admit to impotence.
"I can't. Things have gone too far."
Falku swallowed again and tried again.
"Come home with me, Luge Marina," he said. "I will send the hostages back at once. I give my word."
He glanced at Lev, and his white face said for him what he could not say, that he asked Lev's help.
"Send them," Luge said. "You have no right to keep them prisoner."
"And you'll come..." It was not quite a question. She shook her head.
"You have no right to keep me prisoner."
"Not a prisoner, Luge. You are my daughter." He stepped forward. She stepped back.
"No," she said.
I will not come when you bargain for me. I will never come back so long as you attack and persecute people. She stammered and groped for words. I'll never marry Herman McMillan or look at him. I detest him. I'll come when I'm free to come and do what I choose to do, and so long as he comes to Casa Falcu, I will never come home.
McMillan, the father said in agony. You don't have to marry McMillan.
He stopped and looked from Luge to Lev a little wildly.
Come home, he said.
His voice shook, but he struggled for control.
I will stop the attack if I can. We will talk with you, he said to Lev. We'll talk.
We'll talk now, later, whenever you want, Lev said. It's all we ever asked, senor. But you must not ask your daughter to trade her freedom for Vera's, or for your goodwill, or for our safety. That is wrong. You can't do it. We won't accept it.
Again, Falcu stood still, but it was a different stillness. Defeat, or his final refusal of defeat? His face, white and wet with rain or sweat, was set, inexpressive.
Then you will not let her go, he said.
I will not come, Luge answered.
Falcu nodded once, turned, and walked slowly away along the curving shore of the pond. He passed the thickets that stood blurred and shapeless in the late twilight and set off up the slight slope to the road that led back to the city. His straight, short, dark figure was quickly lost to sight.